This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rising Radio Sinoland, and the founder of Seek Truth from Facts Foundation and the China Writers Group. I'd like to talk a little bit about my last trip to China that was just this month, the last month, the month of May, and today is June 13th, and Evelyn and I were there for a month, and then I was there. And we were there for mostly the month of October of last year. And then I was there in May of last year. So I've been back to China for 3 months in the last 12 months. And of course, my wife and I lived and worked in China from 1990 to 1997, based in Beijing, traveled all over the place because of my work and in agriculture. And so got to see a lot of the country, many of the provinces, and later most of them. And then we were in back in China in 2010 to 2019, 6 years back in Beijing, and then 3 years in Shenzhen. This last trip was really fascinating because there was like two bookends. There was Hong Kong, and a former colony of the British, and then the other bookend was Taiwan, which of course was colonized by the Japanese from 1895 to 1945, and then has essentially been an American vassal since 1949 up to the present. So it was just really fascinating. And today I would like to, and I had never been to Taiwan. This was my first time. So that now leaves only Qinghai on the Tibetan Plateau and Tibet proper are the only two provinces that I have not been to, now that I got to visit Taiwan province. Although I have been on the Tibetan Plateau in Western Sichuan and also in Gansu. Hong Kong has a really special place in my heart because when we were in China in Beijing in the 1990s, we used to go down to Hong Kong a lot because it was better. I mean, it was glitzy and consumerism and restaurants and stores. And it was like a consumer, paradise. And it was relatively clean. And it was, they had a metro, they had buses and, everything else. Not that Beijing didn't have those, but when we were living in Beijing in the 1990s, the pollution was so bad, so many days, you literally could not see across a four-lane street. It was just sheet white. And so the environment was a huge problem. So we would go down to Hong Kong, and we had the Hong Kong Harbor, and the Star Ferry, and dim sum, and shops to go shopping. Not only that, but my wife went down there for prenatal care for our first daughter, and I went down there for orthoscopic surgery on my knee, which I regret now because my right knee is now asleep 24 hours a day and has been for the last 10 years. But that's another story. And so for us, Hong Kong was really a mecca for us. And at that time in the 1990s, I traveled to Shenzhen right across the river, and Shenzhen was an absolute shithole. It was a capitalist jungle, just grotesque with country girl hookers. Every 10 meters there was a hooker on the sidewalks. There were fast eddies and con men and grifters, and it was a capitalist paradise. I mean, that's capitalism. at the street level. And now you and now when we walk across, you know, when Evelyn and I walked across the bridge across the river that separates Hong Kong from Shenzhen, and I even said this back when we were living in Shenzhen, because we used to go to Hong Kong quite a bit because it's so easy, you know, from Shenzhen you can walk across the bridge or take the metro, take the bus, take the train, drive a car, take a taxi, you can be there in minutes. And I always would say, you know, when we were you know, leaving Shenzhen, goodbye 21st century and Hong Kong, hello 20th century. And that's the problem. It's confirmed by us spending several days in Hong Kong. Hong Kong has really not changed since the 1990s substantially. The infrastructure has grown, but it has not been for the people. It has been for the elites, the 10 families that own Hong Kong. This is something that I've written about in the China trilogy. And I also wrote a lot about, you know, the 1990s. So if you want to, and comparing and contrasting when I wrote the China trilogy, starting in 2012. But the construction has been all about, has been about commerce, business, etc. Hong Kong is one of the rare places in the world that less than 50% of the people actually own their own home. There's not enough apartments, and they're too damn expensive. Even if you want to try to buy one, extremely rare compared to China, which has 90%+ home ownership, and 70% of those have their houses, their homes paid off. There's a lot of poverty in Hong Kong. I was really surprised at how much poverty there is. And of course, there's lots of articles about, you know, people living in chain link cages and you know, bolted to the sides of buildings. It's a capitalist paradise. You know, it's over the decades has more and more for the elites, more and more for the wealthy, and less for the working people, which is the way capitalism works. The Hong Kong has a vast area north of Kowloon, which is the tip of the peninsula on the continent that looks across at Hong Kong Island and that magnificent skyline. It's just one of the most amazing things in the world. And up there, it's other than Yuen Long and a couple of other places, it's basically, especially as you get closer and closer to Shenzhen and the mainland, it's no man's land. If that land were in mainland China, they would be building low-income subsidized housing for there's 8 million, approximately 8 million people in Hong Kong. So that means 4 million don't own a house. And so they'd be building enough apartments, probably 1.5 million apartments to get those 4 million people that don't have housing to get into an apartment. I did see one, as we were taking the metro up to Shenzhen, I did see one complex, you know, with like a 30-story apartment towers, but that's it. But the construction is still heavily oriented towards elitist, the elite part of the economy. We went down to M Plus, which is a M with the addition sign plus, and it's nice. You know, it's got like 30-something cinemas, and it's got, you know, dozens of art galleries, And I got on the internet and looked, and they want to compete against, you know, London and New York and Paris, you know, and Tokyo, you know, to be an art, you know, and culture center. They let the Hong Kong citizens have free entry for the first year, but now it's 120 Hong Kong dollars, which is about 15 US bucks. And, you know, I don't know how, you know, a lot of Hong Kong people are not going to be able to, you know, spend a 15 US dollars, you know, to get into M Plus. And then right next to it, they're building this massive, you know, concrete structure in front of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. And they're building out into the harbor. You know, they backfill the harbor and fill it up to get more real estate. But that's not what the people need. The people need housing. The people need, you know, a couple of more subway lines up, you know, up into the peninsula. The people need public parks. You know, Kowloon is cool, but it's a concrete jungle, and there's just not a lot of parks. And I don't know how they're going to solve that problem. But you know, the south side of Hong Kong Island is quite green, and of course, all the outer islands that make up Hong Kong are also very, very green. But the it's not like Shenzhen, which is 50% greenery. 50%, imagine that, with 17 million people, which is over two times the size of Hong Kong. So it's, you know, the 10 families that worked with the British. By the way, eight of them are Chinese, of Chinese origin, mostly from Jiangsu and Zhejiang provinces. And there's a Jewish family, I think it's the Sassoons, and then there's an Indian family. And in Hong Kong, you spend a Hong Kong dollar, no matter where you go, what you do, it ends up getting into the bank accounts of those 10 families. They literally own Hong Kong, the real estate, and therefore the businesses and the rentals. And of course, they have no incentive to build low-income subsidized housing, because that way everybody has to pay rent to them. And so this is not unusual. I've seen maps of Honduras, you know, in Central America, where I think it has 17 counties, and there's a family, and a legacy Castilian family from Spain going back 400 years, and each family has a county, and they own it. And you know, the latifundos, the huge plantations that they used to own, but now it's no different. Now everybody's renting, and the poor people are renting, you know, the land and renting their apartments. Another good example is the Philippines. I think it's 12 families. 12 families literally own the Philippines. You know, these are billionaire families, just like in Hong Kong, and again, legacy Castilian families going back 400 years, and they never left, and they of course intermarried and interbred with the locals, and now look Filipino, but they have Spanish names, and because that's where they came from originally. Was from Spain. These wealthy families. So, I'm very nostalgic about Hong Kong. It's obviously going through a tremendous transition with the Shanghai coming online with its stock market, which really is providing tremendous competition for Hong Kong, because Hong Kong has always been based on finance, banking, the stock market, transshipping. It's a huge transshipping port, and tourism. You know, we cannot get into China, mainland China, without without going to Hong Kong first, because it's so darn cheap to fly there. You know, they have so many flights coming into that place. And so it's so economical to fly there, and then you hop into mainland China after that, or take a flight from there to a different place in China, because it's so much cheaper that way. And so they have. I don't want to say that Hong Kong is irrelevant, but they are clearly falling behind mainland China, especially when you go to Shenzhen. I was just reading articles now. Shenzhen is, you know, lots and lots of young Hong Kongers are going to Shenzhen. It's cheaper. It's livelier. It's cleaner. It's got better infrastructure, etc. The infrastructure in Hong Kong, again, has really not changed substantially since the 1990s. And what they are building is more monuments to commerce, business, and tourism, etc., that is not helping the people get the houses and the apartments that they need. The good news is that since 1997, when Deng Xiaoping and Margaret Thatcher hashed out the basic law to turn Hong Kong over to back to the mainland, a lot of people don't know, and I wrote about this in the China Trilogy. Thatcher was dying to get rid of Hong Kong because there were a lot of protests against the British. I mean, it had been a colony since 1839, and the drug cartel capital for Queen Elizabeth and HSBC Bank to launder all the money, and HSBC is still printing. China's money now, Hong Kong's money now, and so they were sick of the Brits, and they wanted them out, or at least to not be a colony anymore. Deng Xiaoping had the wisdom to say, no, let's wait 50 years until 2047. You know, to give time for China to become bigger, better, faster, and cheaper, which it is now, and to let Hong Kong stew in its juices, and that's what's happening. You know, mainland China, Shenzhen, they're just running away from Hong Kong comparatively, just like in the 1990s for us, Hong Kong was like a paradise, and now Shenzhen and mainland China are the paradises, and Hong Kong is falling further and further behind. Under the current system, with the 10 families owning the place lock, stock, and barrel, and not prioritizing helping the people as much as they need to be helping them, by 2047, Hong Kong will be an insignificant fourth-tier city in China. We were in Chaozhou, 10 million people. We were in Meizhou, 6.5 million people in Guangdong province on this last trip. Hong Kong will be absolutely insignificant. It will be like a small town in China by 2047. The good news is that since Beijing finally forced Hong Kong to pass its national security law in 2020, after all of the horrible U.S. and Western-backed color revolutions from 2014 to 2019, you know, on and off. It got really violent the last couple of years. The saboteurs were really tearing Hong Kong up, tearing it to pieces, and I've written a lot about that. And so, and that's why there were 1,000 employees at the U.S. consulate in Hong Kong. They were not there to eat chop suey. They were not there to eat chop suey and stir fry. They were there to help destroy, to use Hong Kong to try to destroy mainland China by creating a color revolution in Hong Kong. But now that they got that law and they got rid of all of these saboteurs and these turncoats, these local turncoats, and they've got the legislature, the LegCo, what they call it, the LegCo, LEGCO, the LegCo, in line with Baba Beijing to the north. Now, Baba Beijing, the Chinese government, is reaching out to help Hong Kong, and they're now saying, Hong Kong cannot exist on finance, transshipping, and tourism forever. And until 2047, now Beijing is starting to work with the Hong Kong government to for artificial intelligence, high tech, robots and that kind of stuff. There's a lot of room up in the new territories, to build factories, and I don't know, how that land is owned by those 10 families, but I'm sure that those 10 families own it. But that they get into some light manufacturing, high tech, research and development, etc. Hong Kong already has a very solid base for for in the medical field, and so I'm sure that's another area that they will push. But it was really, really, really interesting, and we really, we were there for four days, I think, before before we jumped over to Shenzhen. And I'm optimistic about Hong Kong, but I think, the people are starting to come to the realization that they're not what they were in the 1990s, which was a mecca for us, and that it has now become the tail on the continental, dog, with Shenzhen up to the north. And there are still a lot of people in Hong Kong, fighting. They don't, to the now when they got rid of the British, now that they're standoffish with the mainland Chinese, but the mainland Chinese are their salvation, for the next 30 years, until 2047. The more that Hong Kong works with the mainland, the better off the people will be, especially with if Hong Kong, if Hong Kong can get into high tech, AI, light manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It'll provide a lot of jobs. That's not going to solve the housing problem, and that may not be solved until China takes back Hong Kong officially. Fully, in 2047, no, 2049. I'm sorry, 2047 is Macau, and of course Macau is a completely different vibe. They are essentially already integrated in with China. The Portuguese were not the same colonialists as the Brits. They were basically just traders, and they were not involved in all the drug dealing and the opium and morphine and heroin up into the 20th century, like the Brits were in the royal family in England. And so it's a totally different vibe. And other than the fact that Macau has casinos, I think they'd probably get rid of the border already. Yeah, it's 2047 for Macau, and then 2049 for Hong Kong. And but since gambling is illegal in mainland China, you still mainland Chinese still have to go through customs, and have their passports. So they get a special pass to go to go to Macau. I don't know how they're going to finesse that with the gambling in 2047. But Hong Kong has much, much bigger problems. And thank goodness Baba Beijing is really reaching out and working with them. In fact, I just saw another article. There's all kinds of articles now about mainland China really trying to make sure that Hong Kong does not become irrelevant. But 1.5 million, 1.5 million low-income subsidized apartments would be really, really nice. This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rising Radio Sinoland, signing out. Have a good day.